Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
How do you look exactly the same?
I lost 40 pounds since I emailed you last week.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Richard Lawson.
I'm Hilary Busis.
And I'm Chris Murphy. We're here to discuss the 7th episode of Season 2 of the Max series And Just Like That, titled February 14th.
And in our second segment, we'll hear from New Yorkers about what they think of And Just Like That so far. But first, a quick recap for Episode 7, February 14th.
Oh, that's the worst night of the year.
What a lovely sentiment.
Aiden responds to Carrie's email, saying that he's come to the city and invites her to dinner.
Oh my God! Thursday? It's Valentine's Day! He asked you to dinner on Valentine's Day!
You know, he probably doesn't even know it's Valentine's Day.
Facing her first Valentine's Day alone, Naya chooses not to meet up with her friends.
I have the perfect evening plan. I'm gonna stay at home and make myself a chocolate souffle. I'm having a meevening.
Anthony's Hot Fellas Bakery is invited to the Drew Barrymore show, but he fires any of his staff doing human growth hormones, which is all of them.
This isn't the Moscow Olympics. I run a clean business. Hang up your onesie and go.
So Anthony calls Charlotte for help.
I can't go on the show alone. They want a hot fella wearing the Hot Fellas uniform.
I am so screwed.
Maybe not.
You found fucking Romeo in a card store.
Che finds a stray dog and takes it to the vet where she used to work.
Hey. If you're really broke, I never cleaned out your locker. Not because I'm sentimental, because I'm lazy.
Full-time? With benefits?
Full-time. Plus whatever it costs to patch up this damn dog.
Miranda attempts a date with Amelia, an audiobook narrator she admires, but it goes sideways.
Amelia is off getting quarters to dry her flannel sheets, and I really need to pee. But her freak of a cat attacked me when I went in the bathroom.
Carrie, I may be different, but dating isn't.
It's still a shit show. A cat shit show.
Lisa Todd Wexley does not like her son's girlfriend.
I was totally fine with his last girlfriend. It's just this one. She acts like he's her property or something.
Charlotte unwittingly eats a pot brownie, which leads to a visit to the ER and a big realization.
When I was in that ambulance, my life flashed in front of me and I didn't like what I saw. I have got to get back to me. And it's not just the pot talking.
Carrie's reunion with Aiden is less of a meet-cute than a nearly missed connection.
I thought maybe you stood me up.
I thought you stood me up.
No.
We're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
Which culminates on the steps of Carrie's apartment building.
I just can't do it. No matter how much I want to, I can't go in there again with all that. Never going in there again.
Okay. So obviously the biggest thing that happened in this episode is, you know, I guess Rock quitting fashion. No, I'm kidding. Aiden's back.
And I was going to say the biggest thing that happened was obviously Anthony's new right-hand man, Giuseppe, in his shorts. That was definitely the biggest thing that happened.
If you're going to say that, Chris, you have to do it in a Samantha voice. You have to go, and the biggest thing
and
that happened.
The biggest thing that happened was Giuseppe's penis.
Right hand, more such like a third leg.
Yeah, there we go. That's the writing. That's
oh,
that's
honey.
But yeah, Aiden's back.
Okay, well, should we? Yeah, let's. I guess we can get right into Aiden since you're such a huge fan of his, Richard.
I never liked him that much. I always thought he was kind of a drip, despite his lovely country house that Carrie hated. I think the big question we had when we saw Aiden in the promos for this season was like, is this a Kim Cattrall style one scene cameo? Like, how is it going to take shape? I think by the end of this episode, and really Aiden's only in two-ish scenes, the episode ends with her saying, and just like that, Aiden and I were on the same page, which leads me to believe, and I'm sure you guys agree, that there's more to come.
Oh.
Yeah. He's got at least another episode or two. If not, I mean, could he be, like, could this be a long-haul thing? I guess that's the big question. And should it be, if it...
Yeah, I mean, in so many ways, this episode sort of strained credulity for me. Like, it was just sort of not based in reality in kind of a fun way. And I do think the last scene between Carrie and Aiden in front of her apartment, I was prepared for Aiden to be here for a long time. But when he sort of laid out why he couldn't go into the apartment, I was like, oh, wait, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe he will be here for just one episode. And then for the turn to come, and he was just like, well, let's get a hotel. I was like, that's silly and did not strike me as based in reality. And yet I'm glad that it looks like we'll have a longer runway with Aiden nonetheless.
I guess I am curious to see where it goes, even though it seems like a terrible idea. I don't know. Especially like they broke up not once, but twice. Yeah. It was terribly, terribly messy both times.
Carrie too, not coming out great either time.
Heather Graham made a face about it. Like, there is so much history here. None of it is a good idea. But I guess Carrie is really back from the precipice of grief if she is making terrible decisions again. So hats off.
I was appreciative that they, in Aiden sort of being like, wait, you still live in that apartment. And they mentioned that, you know, great episode with the wall metaphor that he couldn't break through. That it would be even higher silly fantasy if none of that was acknowledged. And it was just like, we're older now. We're both single because of death and divorce. And but I think that like the end of the episode sets us up for more to come, yes, but also maybe it's very tenuous because they're at the moment just happy to see each other and happy to, I mean, not happy to be single in Carrie's case, but like, you know, happy to have found each other at the same moment. And yet they can't sweep everything from their past under the rug.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also, I mean, yeah, Chris, to what you were saying about levels of strange, surreal, like she really would have waited half an hour at the wrong restaurant.
She would have been
without
out
trying.
In 7 minutes flat. She would have been
without
out
trying
of
to
there.
Figure out where he was. She didn't have his phone number. She never thought to get his phone number before agreeing to this date.
Although it's like, if you just like let yourself sort of like let it crash over you like a wave, it was fun seeing her sort of like sidled up to like the maitre d', you know, while their busboy's going in and out, charging her phone. It was sort of deliciously awkward. But there were so many times that I was like, this is not real. And I was like, well, that's okay. That's not necessarily, it felt like we sort of jumped into sort of a new dimension this episode with sort of every
like
character.
Not just with Carrie, where else? Oh. Who else was in another dimension? Drew Barrymore?
Oh my God, that is a big basket.
It has all my bread selections.
Big basket.
Big basket.
Giuseppe.
He's adorable, isn't he?
And,
Drew Barrymore, literally from a different planet.
Wonderful, beautiful planet that we all would like to visit.
Would love to live wherever she lives. And is an incredible cameo. But that whole, you know, Charlotte finding, you know, Giuseppe convincing him to then go on the Drew Barrymore show with Anthony. It just was all sort of, I was like, what? Did I miss multiple scenes that couldn't, the through line was really hard for me to follow, but not unenjoyable, if that makes sense.
I think that the show, you know, the Coco Chanel thing of like, before you leave the house, look in the mirror and take one thing off. It's like, did the hot, well-dressed, street poet from Italy also have to have a huge dick? like,
and then also that is like the center of like a whole segment. I mean, a fun watching Drew Barrymore and Anthony sort of like talk about it on television. That was hilarious. But then that level on top of that, and then he works for Anthony again, I guess, like indefinitely, I guess. Like there was like, it just kept getting sort of more and more absurd in an entertaining but like head scratching way.
He is grating, but I did laugh at "Roses are red, violets are blue. If you don't say yes, I will kill myself."
Yeah.
This was a. I've famously been anti Anthony, but this was a good Anthony episode. And even the little like everybody walking out from his store because they all do steroids. I was like, oh, that's a little the writers knowing. I was like, oh yeah, these bodies are literally unattainable and insane.
I think that you're right that there was a healthy amount, let's say, of surreality in the episode, partly on purpose in the case of Carrie, because it's like, girl, what are you doing? And also Aiden, what are you doing? Like, this is not gonna lead anywhere good, probably, although maybe the show feels differently, maybe they've changed.
I mean, the show is happier now than it was before. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I feel like it's happier. Gunning for a happy ending in some degree, whether it's them together or apart. I don't think that we're gonna end up with, you know, hives under a wedding dress again, although I don't know. That would be more the vibe of And Just Like That season one.
I mean, I guess we haven't really talked on this podcast much about like the grim specter of death looming over the show, which is like, there's a possibility we're not getting a third season of this show. And so maybe they're looking to wrap things up in some ways. But also, speaking to the fantasy of things, I appreciated the leavening balance of the Miranda plot line, which like totally burst the bubble of the fantasy.
Oh, yeah. And that was even sort of unreal. But again, it's fun to see a single Miranda, and also sort of the growth of like, oh, like I'm not 35 years old anymore.
Do you have to stay? You know what? I don't.
35-year-old straight Miranda would stay, but 56-year-old
lesbian Miranda wouldn't.
I don't have to stay in this small cat litter filled apartment just because this hot woman invited me over. I have agency. I can leave. Even though like the specter of like the Jane Austen of it all and like wandering into a bookstore and then she's asked out on a date. I was like, okay, that's also kind of bizarre. But like Miranda,
although in fitting with the original show where, you know, you would like walk out your door and there would be a hot man there and like, you know, give a little quip and then suddenly you'd be out to dinner with him at, you know, Sushi Samba or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. It did feel of the show.
And so bringing up the Miranda storyline, she goes home with Miriam Shore, who's an audiobook narrator
Shore.
Who has a beautiful, beautiful speaking voice and singing voice too, but would love to hear her talk. I do, though, want to bring up something that Sophie Gilbert, the critic at The Atlantic, wrote in her review of And Just Like That season two, which is about the storyline. She says, when one character goes home with a sexy academic only to be disgusted by their anticipated poverty, like that made really turned her off from the show. So I don't know. I think that there is definitely there's a strain in this show of just kind of, you know, everybody is so rich now that I do think that it's on its own like plane where there's, you know, it's a different echelon of society than, you know, most people live in, and certainly than most people that watch this show live in. I don't know. Does like that aspect of it grate at either of you while you're watching it? Are you just willing to let the whole thing be a fantasy, or are you like, why don't these women have jobs? Why don't these women like,
yeah,
are they even less real now than they were once because they are just so rich and out of touch?
I think that the Miriam Shore character was coded as being successful, you know. I think it was more just like, mm-hmm. she has like a decent sized apartment in Manhattan, you know. Like,
I mean, she has a studio.
Yeah, but like, studio,
you
mm-hmm.
know,
she's using a laundry machine in the basement. Like, she's not even sending her stuff out to get
well
done.
Okay, she's not fabulously wealthy, and maybe that was a part of Miranda's revulsion, but I think it was when watching that scene, which I thought was very funny and played well by both actors, my thing was more like, it's maybe making a tired joke about like cat ladies and like single women of a certain mm-hmm. age mm. that felt meaner maybe to me than the class stuff did. But there was also the mm-hmm. Charlotte line about like, he's selling poetry for a dollar. Like, you can get him for nothing. Like, it was this sort of like, Charlotte was like, Anthony, do you want me to buy this guy for you?
Yeah, which she does. Which yeah. She literally yeah. does.
No, totally. And, you know, like, Rock, like, walks outside one time and there's a modeling agent who's like, oh, my God, we must have you for our campaign. And then, like, puts them on the side of a building. Like, there is definitely, I don't know if I need them to be, you know, scraping and scrounging and trying to make it anymore. Like, they can have made it, but it's certainly, when there's not a character who isn't like them, I guess there's Che. I guess Che has money yeah. trouble. They're Airbnb-ing that Hudson Yards apartment.
They're going back to their, you know, their
vet job.
Their vet job, which I thought was, again, sort of just another unreal turn that we'd never known that about Che. And then it's like, oh, of course they've been, you know,
are actually a vet tech this whole time.
A vet tech this whole entire time. I just kept being like, there's one thing at
Have
the other.
Have you ever once seen a stray dog in New York City also?
Not one time, not ever. And...
No. But I guess, you know, kind of with the whole like cat litter thing with Miranda's date, like Che being super into rescue dogs, like, are we stereotyping non-binary queer women a little bit here in terms of the animal thing?
Well, I was like, okay, I was like, they had to humanize Che after Che sort of breaks up with Miranda, not out of the blue, but they've been sort of, you know, a little bit of a negative or villainous character in a way in terms of Miranda's life. I was like, oh, the best way to make anybody like anybody is to give them an adorable dog to hold that's like a care and terror. I was like, oh, this is... It worked a little bit on me. I was like ingratiated towards Che. So I was like, maybe
that's. Do you want to see more of what's going to go on at the vet's office?
If there are more cute dogs like that.
This is Che's private practice esque spinoff of Unjust Like That. About like,
oh we'll look, run for Audrey, nine
a queer
seasons.
Dog rescue.
If Audrey McDonald shows up, like, I think we're all happy.
Yeah, totally. I was surprised based on last episode. Like, I didn't think we were done with Che Diaz because, like, they're too much of a presence in the show's lore at this point, you know, one of the most talked about characters on the show for good or bad. I didn't think they were going to go away entirely, but like, I was surprised. They're like, oh no, they're just going ahead with, maybe this is just a little like rescue plot line, to sort of make the audience not worry about Che if they don't show back up in subsequent episodes. But like, I don't know, this episode presents a world in which Che is still very much a part of this ecosystem, which did surprise me a little bit.
We don't know what's going to happen in episode 8, so we have no idea if Che's sticking around or if this is the end.
And just like that.
But now I really don't know, which will be exciting. I mean, we have 4 more episodes, right? You know, 8, 9, 10, 11. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of ground to cover, potentially. I mean, given the time frame of the show, maybe by the end of episode 11, we're 15 years in the future. Who knows?
It's going to be on the moon, yeah. That's where Samantha's been, by the way. In the space station. Still watching from Vanity Fair. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
We're now in the back half of this season, and we have the reintroduction of Aiden. We have, I don't know, Charlotte being fired sort of by her child as their manager. We have Miranda getting back in the dating world. Like, where do you hope these characters are going and will end up by the end of the season?
I hope that Nia Wallace is going to a different show where they give her something to do.
Other than eat cake and or souffle and listen to Ari Lennox.
Delicious. There must be a glitch in my phone. I'm ready for
the switch to turn me on. Yeah, I mean, I understood why they had to, you know, they had to show all these different relationships of Valentine's Day, right? Because I guess the unifying theme of this episode was Valentine's Day. So
it had a unifying theme.
It had a unifying theme, and there's getting stood up potentially, and then there's going on a bad date, and then there's also, you know, being happy to be alone and single, and that was Nia, right? Which is not the most interesting storyline that could be given to a Karen Pittman. So I also was sort of like frustrated by that. And then
I love the glimpse we got of her two other friends. Yeah. So it's just like, by the way, Nia has friends. Nia's here they friends. Are. Bye.
But yeah, that again, the filling in the blanks like that, it's just not, there's just not enough there. And then we have Seema, who's like the defiant, like who, you know, sort of doing a very classic, I don't want to say tired, but very much like, oh, like Valentine's Day isn't a holiday. Like single people deserve, you know, respect too, which again, you had to have that perspective, or I understand why they wanted to put that perspective in and using Seema to
again,
do that.
Again, the very relatable plot line of I can't use my expensive gift card at the spa.
Even though they could have just done it, again, they could have just like...
Why would they not have just done
just
it in done
the same it room? Why?
Yeah, it's, I was like, a couple's massage means that there's two people on tables in the same room. That's it. You don't have it. To have sex.
No, not at all. You could have just... And they could talk. Again, I guess I kept sort of like pulling my hair out this episode because I've been so enjoying the show, and it's felt sort of, you know, at least some sort of a base reality, right? And this just sort of went in so many different directions at one time. And it does sort of worry me because I don't really see where, beyond Carrie and Aiden and will they, won't they, I don't really see what the dramatic tension of the show is. Like, I'm happy Charlotte's maybe going to, like, get back to work. I think that would be interesting. And then she had a sort of a kooky way of, like, you know, eating a pop brownie, which the second she had a bite of that brownie, I was like, okay, she's going to be high. And that sort of, you know, that was pretty, you could paint by numbers there. Miranda, like, dating again, that is exciting. But again, I'm not really sure what the dramatic sort of, like, tension is. She just had the big blowout with Steve. She broke up with Che. And then Carrie and Aiden, I am a little... I'm nervous. Yeah. I'm nervous.
I think what you're questioning, which is the right thing to question, is like, what are the arcs here? Like, yeah. You know, the best seasons of the original show, Sex and the City, like, yes, they were standalone, discrete episodes, but usually the characters had some sort of journey over the course of a season, whether it was Miranda deciding to be with Steve or Carrie deciding to be with whoever. Like, there was some sort of journey for at least some of the characters in every season. And I don't really see that coming into play yet, and we're at the end of episode 7. Miranda is a good example where it's like, that's a fascinating thing for her to be exploring.
Honestly, I have no idea. It was Che that I was drawn to, and they're non-binary. It's not like I was married to Steve and fantasizing about Brady's friend Drew's hot mom.
But you pulled that name up pretty quickly.
Well, she's clearly hot, everyone knows that.
Is she single?
You don't even know if she's gay.
You don't even know if you're gay. And as your very good friend for over 25 years, I just think you should figure it out so that you can find love again.
And then it feels like it was resolved two scenes later. And it's like, that could have been multiple episodes. Like, Miranda goes on a date with a guy again, and it's terrible. Maybe that's coming. I don't know. But, like, it feels like that was very tidily wrapped up when it's like, but that could have been actually Miranda's story for the whole season.
Yeah, I think that there's more to explore there. And while, you know, the Miriam short, you know, it was fun, I do think that could propel us into, you know, the final sort of third of the season. And I hope that they haven't, you know, wrapped that in a bow as well, because Miranda's sexuality is in so many ways a little bit underexplored in terms of, like, it went, you know, from Steve to Che and then not necessarily back again, but we're in a potentially new place that could be dramatically fruitful. And also funny.
But Miranda hates that lesbians have cats, so, you know. Well, you know, I think it was weeks ago, Chris, I think you're the one who said it. And I don't know, if maybe it was in the promo that you saw or something, but, like, didn't you hint that there was some sort of thing possibly that was going to develop between Lisa Todd Wexley's son and Lily Goldenblatt?
Or did you just say you wanted that to happen?
I thought it would be Brady, but Brady has gone.
Oh, right. That's right. You thought it was Brady. That's right.
I thought it was Brady, and yeah. I thought that maybe the like one of the trailers maybe have like hinted at that. But but Brady's gone, and like the Lisa Todd Wexley,
Brady's gone.
He's gone. That's totally fine. I thought
Brady's healing, hopefully somewhere.
Get it? Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see Lisa Todd Wexley's. I mean, because it seems like he's pre-engaged Herbert Jr. to Baxter, a very comfortable girl in Lisa Todd Wexley's home, which I thought that had like a kind of a fun button. I thought that it might be like, oh, like Lisa Todd Wexley doesn't want Herbert, her son, dating, you know, this white girl or something like that. I thought that's where it was maybe heading.
It's
but no.
Sort of surprising that the show didn't go there.
It's sort of surprising. And I was sort of, it's more interesting, I thought, that it went to, oh, no, she's like really felt way too comfortable taking, you know, in territorial and taking photos in her closet. I was like, okay, that's a little fun turn.
I'm just saying this episode made it very clear that Lily, who was like ready to have sex with her boyfriend last episode, is now single. And it's like,
yes,
maybe a little teen romance is what this show needs. We didn't know it. It's mostly about women of a certain age, yes, but like, I don't know. I think that there's something about like the way this episode was like, no, Lily's single now and Lisa Todd Wexley doesn't like Herbert Jr.'s girlfriend. Like, I don't know. And
I mean, that is the next stage for like a revival show is, you know, you got to find a way to make like Sex and the City babies happen.
Right.
Yeah. The next gen.
It worked so well for Fuller House that
Fuller House was on for like 5 seasons.
And I watched every single episode.
So God, that's so funny.
It is still fun on this show to point out the locations that you recognize. I was gratified to see that Naya and Miranda went to Books or Magic, which is the store that they would be going to, I think, if they were going on a walk from 100%. Their Brooklyn Heights apartment.
I could walk there in about 10 minutes right now if I just got up and left, which maybe I'll do. Bye. No, that was a nice location. But speaking of locations, back to the Aiden mix-up date. You know, we have the classic Il Cantanori, El Cantanoro mix-up from the original show, which I guess they were maybe trying to echo a little bit with this restaurant confusion. But, like, you both live in New York. Have you ever been like, hey, meet me at this restaurant. Here's the address. Not the name of the restaurant. That felt a bit strained, I guess.
And that she gave a name to the maitre d' and that he wasn't like, no, I don't have that. I don't have a reservation under that name. He was just like, come on down.
Yeah. Well, it was Valentine's Day and they weren't very booked.
Oh, but actually going back to the unreality. So Aiden texts Carrie eventually and she goes to meet him next door at the right restaurant. He texts her from a 575 area code. Do you know where 575 is?
Tell us.
Couldn't tell you.
New Mexico. Carrie said he lives in Virginia.
Oh, I guess that's fair. I was like, he's got like a Mesa vibe. I could see him like woodworking in New Mexico, but she did say that he lives in Virginia. Mm.
It's possible he grew up in New Mexico, I guess, but he's not young enough to have gotten a cell phone in the like place where he grew up and then kept that number for the rest of his life.
I mean, you know, he's a journeyman. He was actually, I was surprised by how welcome like he felt on the show. Like, I think sometimes nostalgia cameos, yeah, on this show or other shows like Fuller House are a bit like awkward and sort of unpleasant and janky. And you're just like, all right, like everyone a clap for the guy you recognize from the old days. But in this case, like Corbett still got it in all manner. And he always represented a sort of ease for Carrie that she was allergic to quite literally in the aforementioned wedding dress scene. That like maybe she's ready for, and like I feel equally ready to have a little John Corbett back in this world, because I don't know, I feel like with all of the new characters and everything, a little bit of the old familiarity goes a long way, I'm finding. I don't know.
Yeah, and his energy too is so different from anyone else on the show, really. And also just because, I mean, it's really about women and then we have Che, you know, a non-binary character. Having like a familiar guy who isn't Anthony, I don't know. There's something, it just shook it up a little bit in a very tonally sort of crazy episode. He felt sort of familiar and again, grounding. I was like, okay, I bought their chemistry. I bought them, you know, sort of flirting and having their meet cute at the Red Booth restaurant. In a way that felt like welcomingly familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm not going to write it off just yet, even as an on the record Aiden, anti-Aiden person.
Yeah.
Why were you anti-Aiden, Hillary?
Because, Richard, let me tell you. So I don't think that Aiden's a bad guy. I do think he's a bit of a drip. I think he's, you know, if I met him, I don't think I would have very much to talk to him about. But I definitely think that he was just wrong for Carrie and that he never really wanted Carrie as she was, as like the messy, kind of terrible, like, you know, quirky person that she actually was. He wanted to change her. And that is why she never really wanted to be with him in the long term, because he, you know, wanted somebody who, like, didn't smoke and who liked going to the country to his house that doesn't have, like, running water, and who just wants to stay in with him all night and not go out with Murray Bartlett. Like, I think that they just didn't go well together, and they brought out the worst in each other. And also, yes, she was terrible to him. We cannot forget that. She cheated on him, and then she broke up with him after he proposed.
Yes,
she did. But he was really mean to her. Like, the second before they got back together, he was really mean to her. He was, like, vindictive. And yeah, like, the when he was, you know, trying to make her jealous with that, like, female bartender. It's really upsetting how clearly I remember every detail of this show. I'm seeing that now. But, you know, he tried to hurt her because she had hurt him, which is an understandable impulse. But it's a terrible foundation for a relationship. And, like, once things were ruined between the two of them, like, they could not be repaired, and they both should have seen that. And, like, he was the injured party, but he then, you know, treated her in a way that was bad, even despite what she did to him. So those are my points. They were wrong for each other from the start, but then the second time they got together, he was just so shitty. And, like, why would she put herself through that? I know she felt guilty, but, like, and he's not worth that.
And I agree with you on all those points, Hillary. But, like, from a much narrower perspective of, like, the interest of And Just Like That, or at least my interest in the show, is I loved the one-off Carrie dating episode. I want more of that. I don't need to hurt to settle back into another legacy relationship that is going to have to unearth the past and, you know, discuss how that is in conversation with the present. And, like, that's interesting stuff, but we've had that in a way. And I want, like, Carrie to be single, wild, going on weird dating misadventures, and I really, really want her single when she goes to the Hamptons with Seema.
Oh, that's a great point.
That is a very good
point. He's going to be so annoying about
it. Maybe that's why they break up. Yeah. He's like, you're going where? And then she's like, it's over again.
Yeah, and then she's like, I'm actually not going to trade the Hamptons house for you. I feel like now that they've set up, they're like, they're putting, you know, as one relationship ends, Miranda and Che, it's like, now we got Carrie and Aiden back, and now maybe Miranda is the one who's going to go on these, as we saw this episode, these sexual misadventures and, you know, be having these one-off relationships, which
she can go to the Hamptons with Seema. She can discover whatever queer scene exists out there.
Drive to then Fire Island and get
a drove. I want an episode Miranda that ends with Miranda, like, on the ferry to Fire Island with, like, a hopeful smile on her face.
That would be a fitting end. We'll be right back after a short break.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
Are you watching Just Like That on HBO Max?
I am, actually.
If you remember way back to the very first episodes of Sex and the City, there were man-on-the-street interviews with New Yorkers. We thought we'd try the same. But instead of asking their thoughts on love and dating, we asked what people thought of And Just Like That. Here's a sample of what our producer, Will Coley, found.
So what do you think about it so far?
Definitely liking the second season better.
I don't know, but I'm real mad at Miranda.
Thank you. I have been trying to find somebody.
I am like justice for Steve all the way. I think that they've messed with his storylines too much since the series. Like, even in the movies, I was like, Steve wouldn't cheat. This is wrong. They've done him wrong.
Are you caught up with watching?
I think so.
Did you see the bomb cyclone?
Yes. Oh, my God. The snow fashion. I was living. See, that's like, those were the moments I was like, this is why we loved the show. Because Pat Field gave us looks.
She's a Samantha.
You're not a Samantha?
Her
No, I'm not.
No, you know, just kidding. You never know, but she could be something else, you know. Sometimes I feel like a Charlotte. I think everyone's a little of one of them, you know.
Yeah.
And I love seeing them older because I feel like they don't typically, TV shows don't have a cast that's like older women typically. So I love to see that. And I watch it with my mom because she watched it back when it first came out.
Out of everyone, I am LTW. Are you kidding me? Oh my gosh, honestly, fast forward to hopefully we can get a winter storm in New York City this winter because I have an outfit to serve the same way LTW did. One little storm is not going to stop my vibe. And I'm bringing the wig with me. Vuitton hat box, all right? No, she's everything. She's everything. Hands down, that's probably my favorite character, but also well done to, like, the writers, like, and the casting director, right, for creating LTW. I see a lot of myself in her. Well, for the past, what, 6 seasons when it was on before, we rarely saw a fucking woman of color. And then when you got one, you know, it was Jennifer Hudson as Carrie, entitled Carrie's assistant, right? And so now they're bringing in diversity in this landscape and not just giving you people that work for these three wealthy white American women, right? You're bringing in bad black, excuse my French, or don't excuse it, bad black bitches that are living on the atrocious Upper East Side but have style and grace and charisma, right?
Is it fair to give an opinion? I mean, yeah, New Yorkers have opinions. Why do I have to have actually seen it to give an opinion?
Well, you saw one episode, so you're better at that.
I just think it was great in its day. Like, it was super avant-garde and, like, timely and just contemporary, and now it's just, they're all dressed up in some ridiculous outfits. Part of it was the fashion and felt edgy, and now it just feels craven.
What, like, do you mean by craven?
Like, do they really need to keep flogging a dead horse? They did this like 30 years, it was the 90s, 30 years ago. They've done how many movies? 2, 3? Like, haven't they milked enough money from it? Like, isn't it more interesting creatively to do something else? Like, give it up. It's just finished. It was done a long time ago. It's just done.
I feel this show is more about diversity than ever. All are welcome, right? And yeah, I do feel like sometimes the story doesn't add up very well compared to the original. But I do have a lot of emotions connected to the show and the characters that I still want to enjoy watching it.
But you're not upset about Miranda and Steve?
Yeah, you know, she has to be who she is and be happy, right? And I'm sorry that their marriage, you know, broke down, but that's life.
The new characters are great.
You,
I
like,
love
Shay.
I like Shay without Miranda. I think she's great. This last episode with her and Carrie, I think they've got a great dynamic together. I love the introduction of a non-binary character. I think she's a great actress. I just don't like that couple because Miranda was her own and she's changed with Shay. So what's missing is more shots of the city, because that was a big part of the show as well in the past. You know, because we loved watching Sex and the City, and City was one of the characters, so.
I don't love it. I, like, watched the first episode, and I just feel like it's not the same vibe as it used to be, you know?
Well, you know Aiden's coming back.
Shut up, he is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Maybe I will watch it. I love Aiden.
He was the best.
Well, I've seen the one that's coming next week.
Wow, maybe I should get caught up.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't know.
So you're Team Aiden?
I'm Team Aiden. I'm just Team that actor, too. Like, I love him. Everything about him. He was better. But Carrie didn't treat him right. And now I'm waiting for Aiden. We're waiting for Aiden. We need to know. She hit send on that email, so.
Why do you like Aiden?
You know, I might be because I love him for me. He would have been my choice. a man who's gonna like actually do home improvements and all that stuff. Like, yes, keep him.
One of the hosts is saying that they thought he wasn't very nice to Carrie when they broke up.
Who, Aiden? What do you mean he wasn't nice?
I don't know.
Like, of course he wasn't nice. He's terrible. She treated him terribly. I appreciate that we have someone who is messy and, like, beautiful that we can kind of, like, I guess stick by anyway. But sometimes she's, like, not a good friend either.
And how big a fan are you of Sex and the City and Just Like That?
I mean, it's part of my DNA. It's part of my DNA. End of conversation.
You just heard from an array of voices from Manhattan. Brianna Hunter, Brandon Coleman, Liz, Adriana, Benjamin Wong, Colleen Casey, Christine Connolly, and Marissa Saldivar, who's actually from Sacramento. We want to hear what you are thinking about and Just Like That. Please send us your impressions, questions, or concerns via an email or a voice memo. Send it to stillwatchingpod@gmail.com, and we might share it in a future episode. Still Watching, we'll be back in just a moment. And when we return, the fabulous fashions and the not-so-glamorous looks. And finally, we're at the part of the show where we talk about the clothes in our recurring segment, Killer Looks and Fashion Roadkill. I certainly have my pick for Roadkill of the Week, but I'm curious to hear if either of you have a highlight or a lowlight.
My highlight is LTW's Valentine's Day fit, which is like Cruella de Vil, I want to say. She's got like...
all red.
This amazing all red, like feather boa. I mean, I don't know where one would buy this if not like... I don't know, a costume
Fredericks
store.
Of Hollywood.
A very expensive costume. Yes, exactly. Maybe she got it at the same time that she got the George Washington right. outfit. But yeah, I just thought it was really fun. It was insane, but very fun. And she pulled it off.
Okay, that's so funny. Mine was a sort of, not even a blink and you missed it, but it was at the very beginning. And I'm of two minds of it, but Miranda's sort of big sort of sweater that she's wearing when they're at lunch in the first scene with Carrie, it's sort of white and like maybe like Afghani and like just like sort of a big fashion moment for Miranda. I've been interested, and I thought Miranda looked great when she got all dolled up for her disappointing cat litter date.
She did look good.
Oh, look at you. I see someone has finally declared a major in Hot Mama.
She looked really good and is a very Miranda, like, sort of appropriate outfit. So I'd say I'd give Miranda my props this week for...
Although, I don't know. It is very, maybe a little too presumptuous to go out on a first date in that look. Like, I feel like that's just, like, a lot of dress. I probably would have worn pants.
True, but on Valentine's Day, I understand. I was like, I was like, okay, I get why she, like, you know, she got a little...
You want to make an effort.
Yeah, she's out of practice. She overdressed. It's fine.
Overthought it. Classic Miranda overthinking.
I loved Carrie's sweatshirt in the opening scene. I thought the whole opening and Just Like That scene with her getting the email was really well done with the street noise outside and her like immediately shutting the computer. She looked great and casual. We've talked about her casual wear in this season. But I would have to say, roadkill wise, Carrie wearing jeans that could only be described as enormous alongside a huge striped coat with a different pattern striped sweater. When she went to the and a pageboy cap when she went to the massage parlor, I think, with or the spa, excuse me, with Seema. That was a rough look. I mean, I like that they get experimental with Carrie. Like, that's part of the fun is when the look is a little insane. But this one was a lot insane, I thought.
It felt like she was too sort of on trend, too, with the big pants. Like, I don't know if Carrie, like, it felt a little not like Gen
Z. You don't think that Carrie would be trying to emulate, you know, she's going to just find the biggest pants that she can in order to be...
I'd like to think of her as a little bit more of an individual, like she creates the trends, right? Like she's the one who's setting the tone for culture in New York, if you will. So like seeing her do sort of like somewhat Gen Z cosplay, I also didn't love that, Richard, with the big pants.
That is fair. Do you guys want to classify the Hot Fellas uniform as either a killer look or a fashion roadkill?
When Giuseppe is wearing it, it is literally a killer look.
He could run me over. He could make me roadkill. I also like Giuseppe's post Barrymore sweater, turtleneck, gorgeous like camel coat. Like that. He dresses well.
for mm-hmm. a, you know, dollar a poem poet.
Yeah, that was like, what's that movie where Alicia Vikander is sad by the ocean and everybody's wearing sweaters?
The Light Between Oceans, a great sweater movie. Not a good movie in all other ways, but a good sweater movie.
But a great sweater movie. That's the vibe I was getting, yes.
Well, that does it for this week's episode of Still Watching. As ever, you can find me on Twitter at Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S.
And you can find me on Twitter at Christress, C-H-R-I-S-T-R-E-S-S.
And you can find me at Hillabuster with two R's. And I'm glad that we're not pretending like we're going to get off Twitter anymore.
That lasts a couple weeks.
We're in it for the long haul.
This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer this week is Will Coley, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Jake Loomis. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next Thursday for episode 8. Looking forward to seeing you then.
You're interviewing me because I am a fan of the series. So of course I'm all caught up. Are you kidding me? Thursdays, it's like, I honestly want to just take off from work on Thursday to wake up, watch the show, and just watch it for like 6 times during that day.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.